Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 179. Well, actually, 79 hours. There's 179 episodes of this and Tutar. But we are here live tonight on DLive, as always, and also on RadioAlbion.com, which is run by my good friend Sven Longshanks. Sven does amazing work for this community, so please make sure you have his website bookmarked. It is a great place full of incredible nationalist content, and it also restreams my shows with Patrick Slattery. That's one of the easiest places to get hold of those shows. Now, we have a big show planned tonight, so very quickly, we are just going to fly through the intro, and Jason will do his little intro later in the show because Jared can only be with us for 1 hour, unfortunately. So if you want to contribute to the show, please use Entropy. The Entropy link is in the chat now. You can send paid super chats via Entropy, and they're all read out on the show. You can also send unpaid questions too. We ask the paid super chats to the panel, to Jared, to Jason, and the best of the non-paid ones also get asked too. Now, obviously, if you want to ask a question for Jared, you'll need to get your questions in early tonight because he is only here with us for an hour, unfortunately. Now, you can also send donations to me via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is on my BitChute, or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. That is mark@thefallofwesternman.com, and I can give you alternative means of donation or my Bitcoin address, or if you've got any problems, if you've got any comments, or if you need help with anything, you can email me at that address. Now, obviously, my Twitter was banned earlier this week. Because my Twitter was banned, it is very hard for me to promote this show. I had 65,000 Twitter followers. I no longer have any Twitter followers. That means this show probably hasn't been announced to anywhere near as many people as it usually was. So if you can, please share the link, share it on Telegram, share it on Gab, share it on Parler, share it on Twitter if you still have a Twitter account. And if you make sure you have me subscribed, or if you're subscribed to my content on Telegram and BitChute, that would be awfully helpful, because I don't think my appeal to Twitter will be successful. I mean, we've got our fingers crossed, but I'm not holding out much hope. So let's get straight into the show. The guest tonight is the indomitable, the incredible Jared Taylor, one of the elder statesmen of this movement, a man whose wisdom and intelligence has guided generations to the light and helped people find nationalism and nationalist solutions. This man is an inspiration to me. I think he's been an inspiration to millions of people in the white positive sphere. His work spans decades, and I am sure he will have plenty of inspirational words for us tonight too. Jared, my friend, how have you been? I hope you are well. Please introduce yourself and tell us where we can find you.
I am Jared Taylor, as you pointed out. I wish I were one-tenth the man you described me to be, but you're very flattering, and I'm grateful to be on your program. The best place to find my work is at amren.com, A-M-R-E-N.com. We put out videos, we do podcasts, we have lively discussions, articles. But like you, I have been banned, not just from Twitter. And I must say, you're a bit of a Johnny-come-lately in the banned club. I was banned in 2017, January. We used to be on YouTube, used to be on Facebook, all of these usual things, but now we're surviving quite well in the alternative universe. And I'm sure that many, many of you out there will be joining us there in that happy throng. We do conferences as well as the things that I just described earlier. We try to have a little bit of a real world effect, and our next conference is likely to be next year in November, in Montgomery Bell State Park in Tennessee, which is where we usually have them. But we'll have an official announcement on that later on. But just to pique your interest, if going to conferences is the sort of thing that you like. Again, thank you very much for having me on your program.
Not a problem at all. In fact, it's a pleasure to have you here. And the first question tonight will get straight down to business. What do you think of the presidential election? Was Donald Trump cheated?
I am agnostic on this. I know that probably many of your listeners and viewers want me to come down very solidly on the view that the Democrats have, in the most brazen way, stolen an election. I frankly don't know. But I have more faith, probably, than either you or Mr. Coney does in the process whereby these questions will be litigated. If there are recounts, presumably they'll be done more or less accurately. So I am biding my time. I am not prepared to leap to any conclusion that there was fraud on such a massive scale that it was sufficient to throw the election. And as I say, I'm cautiously optimistic that the usual procedural means will bring out the truth. Now, don't get me wrong. There's no question in my mind that there are many, many Democrats, perhaps the number rises into the millions, who hate Donald Trump so much that if they could get away with it, they would have cheated if they thought that that was going to win Joe Biden the election. I'm, as I say, agnostic on the question of whether or not they did.
Well, here's a follow-on question from that. Let's say Biden does become the next president, because I actually believe there has been mass fraud. I've been on several shows where huge amounts of evidence have been put forward. I think he was cheated. And after being at election counts many times in my life, the irregularities that I saw just from the outside looking in, counts being stopped, massive amounts of votes arriving late, votes appearing out of nowhere, huge leads being overturned, very, very strange stuff. But let's say that Biden does get elected. How do you see that affecting the current troubles in America? How do you think that will affect race relations in America at the moment?
Well, that reminds me, that question reminds me of all of the celebration when Barack Obama was first elected president of the United States. Here we had this black man who was going to absolve the country of all its racial sins. And I was on a radio program with a host who was talking to me and a Yale professor. And I took the position that despite the fact that everyone was using the word transformational, this was going to be a transformational experience for all of the United States. I said, look, nothing is going to change. Do you think black people will suddenly stop shooting each other or getting each other pregnant when they're 16 years old or taking drugs or mugging white people all only because there's a different face in the White House? Do you think that white people are suddenly going to want Mexican neighbors that play ranchera music at 3 a.m. just because there is a black man in the White House? No, nothing is going to change. Many of you will probably remember that there was a time when Douglas Wilder, a black man, was elected governor of the state of Virginia. That was, I guess, about 20 years ago. And there was the same whooping about, oh, everything's going to change. Of course, nothing changed. Nothing changed. And the idea that anything could possibly change just goes to show you the profound level of self-delusion under which so many Americans operate. So, no, the problems are not going to be solved. And my guess is that although rioting always calms down when the wintertime comes, just because Joe Biden ends up in the White House, which I suspect that he probably will, it doesn't mean that rioting is going to stop. And it doesn't mean that there's never, ever going to be another black man who comes at a white police officer waving a big knife or opening fire and gets killed. That's going to happen just as it always did. And just as they always do, blacks are going to riot. None of this stuff is going to be solved. So the idea that somehow by changing the election, we can change human nature, or we can somehow turn black people into white people, or turn white people into lovers of diversity in their real, actual lives, it's all foolishness.
So if Biden does get in, I actually believe that will be a very bad thing for America. I think the riots will calm down. I think they would have calmed down whether it's winter or not. The left will take their foot off the gas. But when that happens, things won't go back to normal. I believe that Biden will attempt to clamp down on gun ownership. I think he will attempt to bring in new anti-speech legislation. I think he will classify people like yourself people like Jason and other pro-white advocates as terrorists. And I believe he will set the stage for absolute terror the next time the rioting begins, because riots will happen again, as you so rightly said. It will all flare up again. But I think in the period of time between the riots stopping and them starting again, I think he will put whites in a position where they are far less able to defend themselves, and they are further deracinated, they are further infected with white guilt and an anti-white narrative, and eventually that will lead to terrible, terrible things for the white community when racial disorder and civil strife does flare up again. What do you think to that assessment?
I certainly don't think that the election of Joe Biden or a Joe Biden presidency is by any means a good thing for the United States. All I was saying, in effect, perhaps defending him, was to say that nothing is going to change in terms of race relations just because this alleged white supremacist and fascist and homophobe, et cetera, is no longer in the White House. I'm not as fearful of you of something like hate crime legislation. In order for us to be declared terrorists or to have our rights legally taken away in some way, you would have to pass a law that I suspect would not hold muster in the United States Supreme Court as it's currently constituted. It's, of course, perfectly possible that Joe Biden, if he were to get control of the Senate, might try to pack the court, load it up with people like Kagan and Sotomayor, who might very well find some end run around the First Amendment to say that anyone who talks about race and IQ, for example, or anyone who says that whites deserve communities of their own, is thereby poisoning the air to such degree that he must be legally muzzled. That is a hard thing to pass legislatively in the United States. I don't think it will happen. But let us not forget, politics and politicians don't have to depend on that. We are already muzzled. We are already deprived of income. We are already socially shunned by private enterprises. And I have always taken the position that this is worse than legal censorship. If there is legal censorship, then presumably there are legal standards for what constitutes hate speech. You can go to court and litigate it. At the same time, everyone knows that there is a commissar with a red star on his cap sitting behind the TV broadcaster who is staring over your shoulder. Everyone knows the government has its thumb on the scales. The way we have it now, you can't go to court. You have applied to Twitter to reinstate your account. Twitter, in its wisdom and its bliss, will decide if you are fit for public consumption or if you are not. There is no legal recourse. And Facebook and YouTube, all of them operate entirely by the same principle. Alas and alack, all of these big companies are in lockstep in terms of what they consider reprehensible and what should be kept from the tender eyes and the tender ears of the American public. So we are at a tremendous disadvantage. On the other hand, I suspect that if there were a legal attempt to bar us, it would fail. And if it succeeded, then it would all be out in the open. The government is doing it, and this gives us every reason to distrust the government. Now, in terms of whether or not the private entities who are doing the censorship on behalf of many people who are in the government, will that be worse or will that be a little bit lessened because Donald Trump was defeated? I think you can make the argument both ways. Some people might say to themselves, well, okay, we got rid of this fascist, so we don't have to be quite as mean to these wicked people like Collett, Taylor, Coney. We don't have to be as bad to them. Or, on the other hand, I think it is, in fact, more likely that the people who control access to information, and alas, it's only a handful that does a great deal of controlling, they will say, well, damn it, not only was Donald Trump elected, 71 million people voted to reelect him, despite having been told for 4 straight years that he is the most wicked, awful, horrible person in American history. We can't let that happen again. It was a very close-run thing. And my God, imagine someone with Donald Trump's politics, but with more savoir-faire, more smooth ability to explain things, a guy who was not a braggart, a guy who did not have the personality defects of a Donald Trump. In fact, I just read an article in Jacobin, which is a rather intelligent leftist publication, and they are terrified of the prospect of someone exactly like that, someone with Donald Trump's politics, but with the smooth manners of a seasoned senator, for example. That idea terrifies them. And I would tell you, I would bet you any amount of money that if Donald Trump, I think, was defeated primarily by two things. One was COVID. If COVID had not come along, he would be elected with no difficulty at all. And the other is his personality, his demeanor. If one imagines a gentleman, then imagine everything that is the opposite of a gentleman, and you get Donald Trump. Now, it's all very well to say that Americans are degraded, their tastes are boorish, but on balance, a man who is generous, articulate, is not a braggart, who is scrupulous about the truth, is going to win the respect of Americans, whatever his politics. So that, too, brought him down. If Donald Trump were a man, I think, of more conventional manners, he would have won. He has made it very easy for the other side to hate him. And a man who has better personal qualities and is better able to articulate his politics of a nationalist or a populist kind, I think, still remains a very serious threat on the national stage, despite the great transformation that we're undergoing.
So I've got one more question for you then. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you were deplatformed in 2017. I was a bit late to the party. Yes. It took to the end of 2020 for them to catch up with me. But we both faced this tyrannical rule from big tech. We've both been silenced. We've both been slowly chased off, or are in the process of being slowly chased off the internet. Now, one of the things that Donald Trump said was that he was going to get to grips with social media companies. He said he was going to do something, and he spent an awful lot of time talking about things he was going to do. He also spent a lot of time tweeting things to people, telling people that he understood their fears, he understood their hopes, he understood their concerns, and that he was on their side and that he had the same concerns. He was very good. I always said he was a very good campaigner. He was excellent at telling people what they were thinking, telling people what they wanted to hear. But in office, I was very disappointed that he didn't do things. And towards the end of his campaign, and especially now following his campaign and leading into these legal challenges, even he has been muzzled by the social media companies. You can't go on Facebook or Twitter and not see these stupid fact-checking adverts constantly telling you that everything that you're being told by Trump is a lie. Now, are you disappointed, or were you disappointed by Trump in office, or were you already braced for what Trump was going to be like? Did you already have very low expectations? How did you feel when he consistently failed to deliver?
I can't claim that I had read his personality so thoroughly that I was not in the slightest disappointed. Yes, I was disappointed. Not as much as some who thought that we had the God Emperor, that this was really the salvation of the white race. I never had any illusions about that. But Donald Trump very quickly proved to be a man who doesn't seem to be able to think systematically, coherently, and sequentially about anything. Maybe at one point in his life, he had a systematic and logical approach to New York real estate. He probably had a pretty systematic and logical approach to seducing women. But aside from those two things, I see no evidence that that guy has had any real serious thought about anything. It's notorious that he never reads books. He learns everything he knows from television. Now, Why is it that he had so many opportunities? He never denounced Black Lives Matter in the terms that it would require. Why did he never talk about racial differences in crime rates as an explanation for police behavior? I don't know if you've seen it, but there is about a 2-minute paid advertisement on YouTube by Heather McDonald. And Heather McDonald is one of my great heroes in mainstream media. She talks about race and crime. And in about 2 minutes, she completely takes apart the idea that Blacks are victims of police racism. She does it with a few very cleverly, well, not even clever, almost obvious statistical comparisons. Donald Trump, if you put him in a room and you spent maybe several hours making him memorize that talk, even Donald Trump is probably capable of making a talk of that kind. He never did. He never made a systematic and careful analysis of anything. I agree with you. He is a charismatic campaigner when he is up before an audience that loves him. And he's bragging about what he's done. He's insulting the opposition. He's telling us how wonderful we are, how wonderful he is, how wonderful the country is. He's very effective. But that works only with people who already love him. And the job of any politician is not simply to excite the people who support him, but to win over people who are at the very least skeptical. And if a guy is really eloquent and charismatic, those who at first don't like him. He failed absolutely miserably at that. Now, there is one more thing that I would like to say about the election, and that's this. As you know, all throughout the country, stores were being boarded up. There was fear of rioting. Why is that? Was anyone genuinely afraid that Trump supporters were going to run around breaking windows just because Joe Biden looked like he was going to win the election? No. Everyone knew, whether they admitted it or not, that there was going to be rioting if Donald Trump had won. Imagine the reversal. Imagine if after a protracted election in which the results took a long time to come out, some were dubious, there were possibilities of fraud, and then at the end of it, Donald Trump was declared the winner. I think we would see riots like we have never seen in America ever before. And this would have been such a clear demonstration that it's not Donald Trump and his supporters who are a threat to democracy. It's the lefties who hate him to the point where they are prepared to throw aside all the rules.
Very well said, brother. And thank you for being with us again. One of my best friends, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jared Taylor. So great to have you with us. And one of the things I love about Jared is that he's a very humble gentleman, and we all deeply respect him for his contributions. Don't want to take up too much time with my praise for my good friend here, but it's just like whenever we have a conversation, it could be about the most mundane things, and it's always a colloquium. It's just magnificent. I love being able to talk with Jared. But I think you made a lot of great points so far, Jared. I think talking about a potential candidate, well, if Trump had been a little bit more suave, eloquent, things could have been quite different. We also have on the other side the anti-whites who will use pretty much anything for a casus belli to wage war on Western civilization, Western kind. So there's a bit of a rock and a hard place. Speaking softly and carrying a big stick when you are neutered by anti-white judges, when opposed by veritable or literal vandals who are really willing to take down, burn down our civilization. What I have a big question for you. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a couple. I have the sort of your expectation on the immediate short-term changes, long-term changes, but I would like to set that aside for a moment because I think that there isn't going to be a rapprochement when, you know, if Biden were to assume the office. I don't think that the Democrats are going to suddenly say everything's going to be fine now. We're gonna rein in the dogs of war or anything of this nature. So, the way forward for us as a community, individually, and what you anticipate as far as the challenges that we're going to face if Biden assumes office, and also if you could. If we also lose these two Senate seats in Georgia, we would have a Senate that would be controlled by the Democrats, a House controlled by the Democrats, and a White House controlled by the Democrats. So just sort of parallel a Senate in the hands of the Republicans versus a Senate in the hands of the Democrats in both scenarios with the White House in the hands of the Democrats, the challenges and opportunities for us both as a community, a white positive community, and maybe just sort of tangentially to that, if you're inclined, as a society here in the States, but then also individually as we move forward, challenges and opportunities?
First of all, our goals and our activities essentially remain the same. It makes no difference who's in the White House. Remember over and over and over, the idiots who publish the New York Times, the Washington Post, and who produce all the cable and television news have said that we three people were emboldened by Donald Trump. That we are sitting here saying these things, or at least up until November 3rd, we were sitting here saying these things because we thought, well, now we can. This is complete baloney. And it astonishes me that people still maintain this foolish, foolish idea that somehow, if it weren't for Donald Trump, we wouldn't be here. Of course, we were here long before Donald Trump, and his coming, his going, has no effect whatsoever on our duty to defend our race and civilization, and that is what we'll continue to do no matter who is in the White House. So our basic goals, our basic duty does not change. Furthermore, even in a second term, was Donald Trump ever going to take a genuinely racial nationalist or identitarian position? I think it's highly doubtful. I had, I must confess, vague fantasies, unrealistic fantasies of Donald Trump perhaps appointing something called the President's Commission on Race and IQ. Imagine that. A group that would get together and look at the evidence, and it would make a presentation that the world could not ignore, in which it was explained to the American public and the world at large that, well, no, the races are not different, and that's why we have Blacks and Hispanics who don't achieve at the same level as whites and Asians. He has the power to do that. The president can do that. He can appoint a presidential commission. Now, I don't know what he really thinks. Does he even know anything at all about the evidence for race and IQ, or race and the ability to defer gratification? I suspect he has only the vaguest notion of any of those things. But if he had done that, or if even all he had to do was casually mention in a room full of people who are going to report to the press, you can't expect to have as many Blacks in the AP classes because Blacks, on average, aren't as smart as white people. Just something as casual as that. Or he could have casually said, well, what's wrong with white people wanting to have their own communities and wanting to live in a country where they're the majority? What's wrong with that? I mean, if the president of the United States says such things, it has to be dealt with. Now, if, as I say, he had appointed a really blue ribbon commission of intelligent, brave people, and there are such people, even in this era of intense suppression, there are academics, there are people that he could have gotten, there are people from all around the world, really, who would have been happy to come forward and say, yes, here is the evidence and the idea that we're going to get just as many Black astrophysicists and just as many Mexican professional basketball players. They are equally stupid ideas. This would have caused an enormous stink. And until the United States and the world is prepared to talk about racial differences in ability on average, there is never going to be a solution to this white guilt problem, systemic racism problem. We will forever and ever and ever be blamed for the failures of others. And this process of blaming us, and I don't know how long it can go on, but this will get only worse under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I don't know if either of you saw Kamala Harris's late campaign ad in which she's explaining the difference between equality and equity. She says, well, equality, that's maybe giving everyone the same opportunity, but that's not enough. That's not equity. Equity is ensuring that everybody ends up at the same place. Genuine, unbridled, an absolutely unabashed expression that what we must have is equal results, not just equal opportunity. This is increasingly official dogma. And the only way white people are ever going to get out from under this terrible dogma is to point out that, well, hold on, we are not equal. And if the president of the United States had been willing to take that position, I mean, he was already called a white supremacist. He was already called a fascist. What risk would it have been for him to do that? I think the risk would have been essentially zero. He didn't do it. Now, that's just one example of the many things he could have done, which he did not do. And I very quickly realized that this was not a man that we could count on.
That is a very, very good take. And I was smiling throughout that because you said some things there that are very, very important to remember. There are people now that I see on social media, and I'm not going to get into arguments with these people, but I know a few of them, and some of those people I speak to behind the scenes. And somebody messaged me the other day, who's a friend of mine, and he said, you know what? He said, I still trust the plan. I think this is still all part of the master plan, because Trump will overthrow this. Trump will overthrow this in the courts, and it will show all of his enemies a cheat, and it will give him unprecedented power so he can do what he needs to do next term. And there are people saying that. There are people still clinging on to this idea that Trump is everything, trust the plan, all this Q rubbish. But what you said there, that we were here before Trump and we will be here after Trump, that is one of the most, well, that is one of the wisest and most morale-boosting statements I've heard in a long time. Because I think far too many people have had far too many of their hopes and dreams pinned on the successes of Donald Trump. And ultimately, he has done some things that have also been quite embarrassing. As I say, I've been quite a fan of some of the things he's done. I've been quite a fan of his ability to get people talking about demographics, race, immigration. I've been a fan of the fact he got people calling the mainstream media fake. I'm a fan of the fact he basically exposed the deep state. When I used to knock on doors and had to try and explain to people that there were shadowy people behind the scenes pulling the strings, doing things that they shouldn't be doing and wielding huge amounts of power, that was very hard to sell. Now everybody talks about it and they call it the deep state. But he did other embarrassing things. He was constantly trying to appeal to the black and the Latino vote. And apparently he did marginally increase the number of blacks who voted for him. But apparently he actually lost a lot of the white male vote in doing that. Now, whether these people stayed at home or whether these people actually voted for Biden, I don't know. But he did show a decrease in support from white males. Do you think he went too far with his craven groveling to minority communities? Do you think that now is so bad it actually turns off a significant proportion of the Republican supporter base?
Frankly, I don't have a good explanation for why his support among white men declined, nor do I have a good explanation for why his support among white women increased, not by as much as it declined among men. Let us not forget that all of this information is based on exit polls. Now, why would exit polls be any more accurate than the polls that predicted a Biden landslide? I don't know. But let's assume that this information is correct. I don't know why more non-whites voted for him and fewer whites. Of course, as a result of this, the Republican wise men are saying that, oh, despite what everything's said about Donald Trump, he is paving the way for the new multi-culti Republican Party. This is baloney. My sense, my intuitive sense is that blacks and Hispanics and the appeal that he made to them was not something that sent white people away. And after all, he got more votes overall than he did last time around. We had a higher turnout in percentage terms in the highest turnout in the last 100 years. And this to me is very significant. Instead of the usual about 60%, maybe 59%, 61% of eligible voters who voted, we had 67%. That's a big jump. Why do we have that big jump? It's because I think that the country is more divided than it has been in the last 100 years. And so even the inert people who ordinarily never vote in elections actually decided, well, gosh, this might make a difference. I'm actually going to go vote. It's still astonishing to me to think that 37% of the people who could have voted didn't vote, but they didn't. This is a fact of American society. Most people are politically inert. So what's the significance of the changes? These are very slight changes, really. I honestly don't know why. If I would have expected Donald Trump to lose a certain percentage of the white vote, I would have expected it in women, not men. Women are far more susceptible to accusations of racism, white supremacy. I would have expected them to have done what they were told by the media and decided that this guy, even if they supported some of his policies, he was just a bad, bad guy. And we can't have a bad guy in the White House. I wouldn't expect men to respond to that. I would expect women to. So why that happened, I don't know. As for the non-whites who voted for him, it may be that they remembered that the economy under Donald Trump was, in fact, as good as he said it was. Unemployment was down at record lows for Blacks and Hispanics. Donald Trump couldn't shut up about this. And in fact, it's true. Maybe some of them have a greater faith in Donald Trump to bring back a better economy than they have in Joe Biden. But again, these are trends that surprised me, and I don't have a good explanation for them. And again, I will leave your viewers with the idea that insofar as these are based on exit polls, and the polls we've seen have been notoriously inaccurate, these numbers may just be a bunch of fudge after all.
Can I get you?
Sure. Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, Mark. Just really quickly, Jared. Yes. Jared, if I could get you to perhaps to speculate down this line of thinking for this statement: white women perhaps voted for. I'll just say it as an affirmative. White women voted increasingly for Trump because they were afraid of the disorder. White men voted less for Trump because they never heard of any benefit over the past 4 years that Trump was going to give or do for them explicitly, by way of all of the talk that he was doing for every single other group, literally naming women and Blacks and Hispanics and Asians, Arabs. Just if you could maybe speculate on whether or not there is any weight to that, either of those statements.
I really don't know. You could be right. The fact that Donald Trump's opponent the first time around was a woman, it may be that the fact that instead he was facing a man, sort of this bumbling, old, avuncular, semi-incompetent white man, as opposed to someone who many people viscerally hated, maybe that had something to do with it. I know that a lot of white men despised Hillary Clinton. And the fact that instead they had a white man that they could vote for, maybe that had something to do with it. Again, I just don't have a good explanation, and probably an explanation that would work for maybe a portion of the electorate doesn't work for another portion of it. So I really can't say. The one thing, though, that I think is worth remembering is that whites are still 65% of the electorate. You can't win. You can't win without at least a few white votes. Now, I did a little calculation the other day, and I figured that if there was complete racial polarization in the vote, if you got every single, you could win the election if not a single non-white voted for you, if you won 77% of the white vote. That's an interesting figure. It's probably out of the question, and probably even the weirdest candidate would not get 0% of the non-white vote. But this is an interesting thing that I think that's the direction in which the Republicans should obviously go. They're not going to get 77% of the white vote, but perhaps 70%. That's not entirely out of the question. Interestingly enough, a guy like Mitt Romney, he won a higher percentage of the white vote than Donald Trump did this time around. But Donald Trump, because he got 25% of the non-white vote, had this squeaker of a situation in which, although he did not win, he won fewer votes by about 3 or 4 million than Joe Biden, he still had a chance of winning. So all of these are strange aspects of the American electoral system, but don't forget that a majority of Joe Biden's votes, 54% of his votes, were from whites. This is the aspect of the American voting behavior that is most intriguing. Donald Trump got 87% of his votes from whites, but Joe Biden still got a majority of his votes from whites. Whites are still important. And if you want to be optimistic about the prospects for a future Republican president, you have to take into consideration the fact that the Democrats are a weird coalition. They're a weird coalition of rich whites, all the billionaires, of course, except maybe for, that Berkshire Hathaway guy. Why is his name escaping me? Anyway, the Jeff Bezos and the Bill Gates and Zuckerberg, all those guys, the billionaires vote for the Democrats. And the white weirdos, you know, the transsexuals, the anarchists, they vote for the Democrats. And then you have this odd coalition of immigrants, illegal immigrants who love him, blacks, Hispanics, the LGBTQQQ, all of these people. Now, those folks don't really like each other very much. They don't get along well at all. And then there's the Bernie bros. They felt they were cheated. It's not impossible to imagine a future general election in which some of those factions fall apart. It's not difficult for me to imagine the AOC types and the Bernie bros forming a new party. That's not impossible. If they really got furious with Joe Biden, they don't think he's radical enough. So it's not as though the Democrats are a monolith that without weaknesses. It's possible that there could be cracks in that facade, especially now that they don't have this hate figure of Donald Trump to unify them. And over the next 4 years, what's going to happen with COVID? What's going to happen with the economy? What's going to happen with rioting? We don't know. It's going to be a potentially difficult position, difficult situation, no matter who is in the White House. So I think it is premature, at least at this stage, to completely count the Republicans out.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to get to the super chats because you've only got limited time left, unfortunately. This hour is flying past, as it always does when you're a special guest. The audience absolutely adore you. So here are some of the super chats. Junta Mominari gave $5 and said, are you aware, according to US Census in 2020, the under 25 populations of white, black and native population are actually declining? Overall black population is up because of lower death rates, longer life expectancy, and immigration from Africa. That's more of a statement.
Oh, yes.
But do you have anything to say?
You know, it's all very well for us racially conscious white people to blame the great replacement. That is a definite phenomenon that is a terrible challenge to us. But at the same time, we have failed to reproduce. That is a great defect that you find in virtually every white population. And this is a problem that I don't know how to solve, but it's one that we must bear on our own shoulders. So, yes, that's entirely correct. I'd never heard that native-born blacks are declining in numbers. I'd have to check the statistics on that because the black birth rate is still higher than the white birth rate, but it is conceivable that the black birth rate has dropped below 2.2, but I would have to check that.
Okay, thank you. The next question is from Serena JB. She gave £3. Thank you very much, Serena. And she says, the Democrats are already talking about support for the rebels in Syria. Do you think they'll manage to further destabilize the Middle East if they win, which would have the consequence of even more refugees?
Oh, I think that's entirely possible. One thing that Donald Trump campaigned on was not starting any foreign wars and ending our engagement overseas. He failed to end our engagement overseas. At least he didn't start any new wars. Now, the Democrats are much more bellicose in that respect. And so depending on what they do, yes, they could very much increase the number of refugees. On the other hand, I think the most likely problem is that Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, he could go into a snit and decide to turn loose the millions of Syrians that are in refugee camps in his home, in his country. That's always been a Damocles sword hanging over the heads of the Europeans. They've been paying him millions of euros a year not to unleash this flood of Syrian refugees. If he decides he wants to do that, it would make no difference what the situation in the Middle East was. He could send them on their way. And because the Europeans have no more backbone than the Americans, because they're incapable of simply saying no and making sure they don't land in Italy or in Greece or wherever they decide to land, then they are at the mercy of Erdogan, whatever the Democrats do in the Middle East.
Thank you. The next question is from JP. He gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, Mr. Taylor, I cannot thank you enough. Learning the truth on the differences of race from your work was life transforming. Everything made more sense since then. I pray that you and your family continue to live a fruitful and blessed life. Mark and Jason, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, thank you very much for those kind words, JP.
Yes, I agree. Thank you very much. That's very kind. It's always encouraging when people say that our work, I'm sure you feel the same way, when people say that their eyes were opened by something that we were able to say.
Thank you very much. Junta Mominari gave another $3. Thank you very much. And he said, I would double the fertility rates for Great Britain. Fertility for all races in US, Australia, Denmark, and Canada are below replacement. Great Britain would be an extreme outlier if it wasn't part of the trend. Thank you very much. Blunderbuss gave $10 and said, I still say that E. Michael Jones concocted this whole COVID scam to get out of the debate with Jared at the Scanza Forum in Croatia. Thank you for that. And you might be right. Jez gave $10 and said, what is Jared smoking? Defeatist cocaine? Trump has not been defeated yet. And if the level of fraud is proven to be as great as he claims it is, once the fraudulent votes are removed from the counting, he will actually have won an even greater victory than in 2016, and your analysis is rendered bogus. What do you say to that, Jared?
Well, it remains to be seen. As I said, I'm agnostic on this. And if there are recounts, that will give both sides an opportunity to look at the ballots very carefully. And if there is litigation and it is proven that there was voter intimidation or there was ballot box stuffing, all of this will come out. But to change the results of the election require two things. You have to prove that there were irregularities and there were fraud. And you also have to prove that there was enough of it to swing a state or states so that the count in the Electoral College shifts and makes Donald Trump the winner rather than Joe Biden. These are difficult things to prove. So, as again, I remain agnostic on this. I can't claim that I know any more than anybody else. But as I say, I do have a certain amount of faith in the legal process, at least as it concerns the vote count. And also, if there are recounts, then again, as I say, representatives of both sides will have ample opportunity to look at every single ballot as it's counted. So all of these things will come out. I have a cautious optimism that that will be the truth. And if it turns out that Joe Biden won, he won. If Donald Trump won, he won. I don't take a dogmatic position either way.
Well, thank you very much. The next super chat is again from Junta Mominari. He gave $10 and he says, has Mr. Taylor seen the documentary by CNA, Singapore's equivalent to the BBC, about what it means to be Japanese? Spoiler, anyone can be Japanese, an immigrant from Niger, Pakistan, or even those on the panel. Japan has changed a lot since you lived there, Mr. Taylor.
Well, the Japanese have not changed that much. I have been in touch with many Japanese over the years, and they're Japanese that I still know. And the ordinary Japanese has no interest whatsoever in a multicultural, multiracial Japan. It is true that, like so many different countries, the media and the people in power are far more to the left, far less nationalist and far less identitarian than the ordinary people. And it is true that Japan has changed its immigration laws, that there are now visa categories that permit even unskilled foreigners to come work in Japan. This, too, is a function of the birth shortage. The Japanese birth rate is even lower than the white American birth rate and the birth rate in most European countries. And if the Japanese have a choice between disappearing to nothing because they can't reproduce themselves and letting in a certain number of foreigners, there are those who are going to let in foreigners. But I still have confidence that, as a general rule, most Japanese have no interest in seeing their country replaced culturally or demographically. This idea that if somebody did put together a documentary of this kind, I'm sure they could find a few Nigerians or Pakistanis who are living in Japan and say, oh, yes, I'm Japanese. I can assure you, most Japanese are going to look at something like that and roll their eyes.
Thank you very much. Daniel Lewis gave £50 and simply said thank you. Well, thank you, Daniel. Thank you for such a generous donation. That is very, very gratefully received. Jez gave another $10 and he's got another question for Jared. He says, will Jared acknowledge that the reason the establishment GOP will not become a pro-white party is almost completely because of them being owned by a certain Semitic tribe and AIPAC? And will he call out that tribe now as the problem rather than pretending that whites are somehow still at fault? You always get asked this question on my show. Yeah. You always get asked this, so I'm sure you have. Yeah.
Look, there's no question that Jews have been extremely active in all of the academic and institutional efforts to undermine the legitimacy of white racial consciousness. Of that, there can be no question. To then say that Jews therefore completely control the GOP or that they control all of the media, I think that's going too far. They have certainly a predominant influence far beyond their numbers. Also, I disagree with the view that because we can point to a number of Jews who have been just unflagging in their attempts to undercut the legitimacy of the views that we hold, that therefore all Jews are to blame. There are a certain number of Jews who support our views, who consider themselves likewise very much men of the West. Now, is it the case that the Republican Party, no one in the Republican Party, is going to be able to say, look, white people have legitimate interests? Is that because of the influence of Jews or AIPAC? I think that there are a variety of different reasons for that. There has been a kind of takeover of the American intellectual landscape that makes it increasingly difficult for people to take that position. Yes, Jews have played a role, but I think it is a temptation on the part of some to exaggerate that role.
I often say that Jews play a disproportionate role. They're disproportionately overrepresented in anti-Western activities. And I think that's what you said, but in a much more eloquent way. And it's nice to hear you say that, because when we invite you on, we love you. You are an amazing guy. But people always ask this question. And I think that was a very robust answer. So thank you for saying that.
I'm frequently accused of being myself a tool of the Jew. Or that my wife is Jewish. Oh, yes, that I must be getting money from the Sanhedrin. And that's why I don't tell people about the real problem. No, I'm aware of this problem, but I think that it's one that we should not get obsessed about. And there is a temptation, just as many blacks, if it happens to rain on their birthday, they're going to find some way to blame the white man. I think there are some people in our ranks who find whatever has gone wrong with the way we are living, and they'll find some way to blame the Jews. In a way, that does absolve ourselves of responsibility. But we as white men, we have to recognize that we have the capacity and the power and the responsibility and the duty to take our destiny in our own hands. And I think that it is a mistake to somehow say, well, it's out of our hands. It's been taken out of our hands. It is still very much in our hands.
I agree. I think it's important to balance the truth of the matter with not becoming trapped in some kind of cycle of defeatist victimhood. And what I mean by defeatist victimhood is if you build, I believe these people do play a vastly disproportionate role in the destruction of the West and push anti-Western activities, Hollywood, the porn industry, usury, etc., etc. But at the same time, we can't place these people on the kind of pedestal that makes them seem like an undefeatable force and that we have no agency in this and that we can't fight back. And sometimes, and I'm not talking about people who talk about this particular group, I'm talking about other people. When you hear people like Alex Jones, and he doesn't talk about these particular people, but he talks about the Illuminati. He talks about them in such a way that they become this indefeatable bogeyman, and we're actually robbed of any agency in our lives to do anything about it. Because if they're as powerful as he claims, we're never winning. And I think some people use that power as a crutch not to do anything. Oh, we can't win because these people are too powerful. And it's very important to state what you have, that we still have an awful amount of power in our own hands and we can still make a big difference. So thank you for that. I do have a very important comment for you here. An elderly gentleman in the UK who goes by the name of Crowley's granddad, he made a generous donation to Patriotic Alternative the other day. He's been since his grandson got him watching this show, he has been loving every episode. And I believe he was very much looking forward to seeing you on here tonight. So I was wondering if we could get a hello for him before you have to retire.
Well, by all means, a more than a hello. Let me extend my warmest racial regards, and I hope that this gentleman and his grandson both have every success in their efforts to support our people.
Well, thank you so much. We've got another question for you here. It's more of a comment. Jekyterio gave $3, and I've got to say, I agree what he's saying here. He said, compare Joe Biden's rallies to Trump's rallies, there are clear indications that Biden got a helping hand in this election. At least Hillary had supporters, unlike Biden. And you've got to say, he was very bad on the mic and his rallies were bad. And there was something you said earlier that I wanted to sneak in. You wondered why women didn't vote for Joe Biden. I played a Joe Biden speech to my lady and she watched that and she flew into a little mini rage, saying, how on earth can anybody vote for this man? He's such a bumbling idiot. You'd have to be like a literal moron. It annoyed her that anyone could even consider him as a credible candidate. I don't know if that pushed the Trump vote up, but that was her thinking.
But don't forget, I think men are more unforgiving of bumbling idiots than women. Women have a kind of compassion like that and think, this guy is a pathetic loser. I will not vote for him. So I think it would be difficult to make that argument to justify why women moved towards Donald Trump, but that white men moved towards Joe Biden. It's a perplexing difference of the tendencies there. And I repeat my inability to explain it.
Well, I can say this. People often wonder how I stay so sharp. Well, having such an unforgiving and critical woman in my life certainly keeps me as sharp as a razor. And she was very, very uncharitable towards Mr. Biden. I've got another question for you here. This is from Ragnar Danuskold. I probably mispronounced that. I am terrible with names. Thank you so much for the $5 donation. And sorry for mispronouncing your name. But Ragnar said, is politics still the answer, or do we need to focus on creating our own ethno towns like the Free State Project, but for white people?
I have for years been saying, but I confess not doing very much, in terms of the importance of establishing white communities. There was a time, maybe 15 years ago, when we had a debate on the pages of American Renaissance, back when it was still a print magazine. And the question was whether or not it is possible to retake the entire United States or whether we should accept some sort of partition. And 15 years ago, the idea of a partition was anathema to so many racially active whites. Today, if we were able to draw a line right down the middle of the country and say to the non-whites, you know, your pick, you can take whichever half you like, we'll be happy with what's left. I suspect a lot of racially conscious whites would think that was a good deal. Now, it's not going to shake itself out that way. But if whites are to have, if we really are to preserve some bits of wreckage from our civilization, I believe the only way it's going to happen is that if we do coalesce in certain areas, take over local politics, school boards, start modestly. If we do this, it is conceivable that a state could break away this is not entirely impossible. It seems fantastic now. It seems like the stuff of just unimaginable fantasy. But today, the United States, I do not think, would go to war to keep a state within its borders if it wanted to leave. The point is, unless whites are able to organize their lives in ways that build community locally, if we do nothing in that respect, I do not suspect that anything at the national level is going to reverse the processes that are underway now. Donald Trump was not reversing those processes. He was slowing white dispossession, but he certainly wasn't turning it around. He certainly was not propounding policies that would preserve a white majority or give whites any kind of protection from the constant infiltration of non-whites. We cannot have communities of our own legally. We cannot legally do that, but we can get together in ways that I think establish communities of a kind that non-whites would find undesirable. They would not be likely to move into an area that had a conscious sense of being Europeans. So yes, this is very much the direction in which we must go, and I believe that will be for white people, racially conscious, patriotic, healthy white people, that will be the next frontier, while at the same time, we do not give up by any means on our efforts to affect politics at the larger level.
Well, thank you. And that takes us comfortably up to the hour. I wish we could keep you for 2 hours, Jared. It's been absolutely amazing having you on tonight. The audience has loved it. We've had nearly 2,700 watching on here on DLive. We'll have many hundreds more on RadioAlbion.com. Amazing numbers you've brought with us. You always bring the fire. Amazing answers to some challenging questions. Is there anything you'd like to say before you leave? And thank you so much for being here.
The main thing that I would say is that no matter how dark the future appears, we have a tremendous advantage, and that is we're right and they're wrong. Never forget that. Never forget that. In the long term, I do believe that those who are right, those whose views are in perfect conformity with history and human nature and all we know about human psychology, we will viewers and listeners.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Jared. It's been an incredible hour. You've, as always, absolutely amazing. We will put your links to your website, etc., in the description of the show when it's uploaded to BitChute, and we will let you leave and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Thank you. Again soon. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye. Well, wow. Well, we've still got an hour left of the show, but that was incredible. I understand that some of the audience will now leave because that was something truly special and people were coming to see Jared. I'm happy for lots of reasons now. I am happy because we've had an hour of time with such an incredible man. I'm happy because he answered every question so eloquently. He dropped some incredible white pills. He put the Trump presidency into perspective and he finally answered the burning question about the JQ. That was fantastic, and he answered that eloquently, and I think more than satisfactorily. But it also pleases me to say we've had nearly 2,700 watching at peak on this channel tonight, and that is a few days after I was deplatformed from Twitter. I had lots of people contacting me over the last few days saying, what are you going to do now, Mark? Surely it's all over. How are you going to promote these shows? What are you going to do? And obviously, you do have concerns like that. And I said last night on the special stream about it, it's not going to stop me fighting. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to throw in the towel because I've been booted off a social network. And after seeing the response, both last night where we had about 2,300 watching over two platforms and tonight where 2,700 on DLive and obviously, there'll be many more watching on Radio Albion. There's been an amazing response, and it's really not just lifted my spirits because of what Jared's been saying, but it's also lifted my spirits to see just how many people are watching these streams. Absolutely, absolutely fantastic. I'm really, really happy with the numbers tonight, and I think it's been a fantastic show so far. But it certainly isn't over yet. Somehow, in the next 55 minutes, I have to pull some form of entertaining content out of thin air. Because if you think I've spent today preparing for the next 55 minutes, you'd be sorely mistaken. In fact, I have very little. But we do have some non-paid questions that we can go into. We also have a super chat. You can still super chat if you wish to. And any super chats asked or directed to me and Jason will be gratefully received and answered. But we are still here, as I said, for another 55 minutes. And before we go into the remaining part of this show, I just have to throw out some information. Jason didn't do his introduction at the beginning, so I'm going to give him a little bit of a section in a second. But I've got to say, if you thought this week's show was good, we are following it up with another big, big show. Next week, we have Morgoth booked. It's been a while since Morgoth has been in the show. He's a great friend of the show. He was obviously scheduled to speak at the next PA conference. He will be speaking at the next PA conference, although that will be now next year due to this scamdemic. But we have an amazing show planned also for next week. And we have more entertainment planned when this show ends. This show ends. It's not bedtime. Oh, no. We have Jodie K, the White Butterfly, over on YouTube. She is an amazing new content creator. She is a very talented musician. She is a great speaker, and she's someone who is always filled with absolute positivity. If you want to feel uplifted, if you want to feel good about being part of this movement, Jodie is one of those people that when you watch her content, when you hear her speak, when you see her smile, you will feel good about being part of this movement. She brings an amazing energy, amazing warmth with her. And she's another one of these wonderful new recruits that is fresh to nationalism, has turned her back on liberalism, and is now fighting for our cause. So please do support her a bit later. But now let's get back to the intro of the show. Jason, my friend, what have you been up to this week? And who is on tap?
Well, it is always.
Before we go into this, I've got to say this. The other day, I get up in the morning and I'm thinking, what am I going to watch? Because I always listen to something while I'm doing my emails in the morning. And this madman was live on YouTube after a 10-hour stream. And not only was he live on YouTube, he was also incredibly coherent. Now, I don't think I'm particularly coherent after 10 hours of anything, let alone 10 hours of back-to-back solid streaming. I don't know how Jason does this. I don't know where he gets his energy from. We talk about David Duke being the Duracell bunny of nationalism, but I think Jason might end up taking that mantle from him. And looking at Jason's physique, he could well be David's illegitimate son. What's he doing? Is Jason secretly David Duke's son? If he is, can we get a one in the chat? But mini David, what have you been up to this week?
Thank you very much for the good words, brother. Yeah, that was a great stream. Just under 9 hours this past Sunday. And unintentionally, I feel like we run out of time, that we need more time to continue to talk about everything going on in the world and explain everything going on in the world. And yeah, don't leave, folks, because we will, I'm ready to, after giving the intro for myself for the show today, go over a lot of what our good friend, Mr. Jared Taylor had to say. And there'll be some points of disagreement that you all will be able to discuss, I think. That'll be a heck of a lot of fun. But yeah, it's great always to appear with the great Mark Collett. And Jared Taylor, what a show, what an interview, and some great insight from that good brother. Tap today, later this week, actually. We're still hunting down our guests, so it's probably going to be tomorrow or Saturday. We really liked this last Saturday, went very well. We had a host of guests, and maybe we'll end up doing that again. So we'll think about that. So look for us on any of the platforms, nowhiteguilt.org, theafterparty.tv, and of course on YouTube at No White Guilt for now, Discipline with NWG, and all of these other platforms that we are on. So look for us there for further details. I just want to say, my, my apologies, my condolences, to lose the amount of work that Mark lost when we get censored from platforms. It's excruciating. There's a lifetime, and a lifetime is memories. We should always remember this. When the anti-whites censor us from our platforms, life is memories of the things that we're doing and the things that we are investing those minutes and hours in. And those things can't be recalled and reinvested somewhere else. That's life. That's our lives. And when the anti-whites come along and they just delete it all, they just erase it all, we need to see this for what it is. And it's a deletion of our lives. It's a deletion of the investment of that time that we can't recall. And rest assured, the anti-whites would have no problem going into not only a reality like that, but all, multiple levels of spiritual suffering and everything else if this were reversed and they were having to endure these things. Absolutely despicable. So heart goes out for all of that work. We did have one of the wonderful ladies here just a couple days before Mark's Twitter was deleted, Althea, who was, she promulgated all of our information that we did on Twitter. She spread it to a great many thousands of people. She did nothing whatsoever, nothing whatsoever. And Twitter decided, well, I guess because she was promulgating white positive material too effectively, that she was now gone. So she is, her Twitter is deleted. It's censored into oblivion. It's not coming back. She's now on Instagram as Althea Promethea, and I'll share the link over the course of what's left of the stream as well. I also want to point out that Tony Vermont and Jeff from White Art Collective, Mamas and the Pepes, and everybody who works on this sort of thing, this absolutely stunning White People's Quarterly, the third edition is now available, and you can get yours we'll see if we can find the link over the course of the what's left of the stream. Absolutely magnificent. The artwork in this magazine, this is the kind of thing that you want to have on your coffee table when the family comes over for holidays, when your friends come over, so that they can say, what is this? They're going to dig inside to this. They're going to see it's white positive. And as I say, it is replete with magnificent works of art, paintings, poetry, articles. A truly splendid production, and we are grateful for them and the work that they're doing. I want to also say a happy remembrance for Veterans Day for all of the countries across the West who are remembering our veterans and the wars that they fought in. We celebrate our brothers and sisters on both sides of every conflict, their heroism. We remember on both sides of every conflict, and we say, in the remembrance of their heroism and their lives lost and their sacrifices, never again another brother's war. Never again should a white man draw the blood of another white man for the interests of some other group of people. So, and a special note of love for all of my ancestors who fought in the War for Southern Independence and failed in that effort, that bid for their independence. But again, love on both sides for and respect and remembrance on both sides of that conflict for all of the white men, their lives lost, their families ruined as a consequence of that absolutely needless conflict. I do want to say right at the beginning, also, I'll go ahead and reveal something. So for those who were intelligent enough to stick around, and this is in contradiction to information, of course, to what Jared Taylor was talking about with his position about the election. But of course, he didn't have this information. So this is being revealed here on PWR for the first time. I don't think this is inside information that I have acquired from a contact in New York. And I don't think this has been reported on the news anywhere else. But if I'm wrong, then so be it. I imagine there are others who are getting this information. But there are... it's going to be revealed. Millions of ghost votes are going to be revealed to the United States and therefore the world that were cast in favor of Joe Biden. There's a great amount of information that is coming forward, of course, as you know, with claims of people who were deceased and who voted, people who even registered after voting. And you have affidavits that are not being reported on the news or not being allowed to be reported anywhere, not even on Twitter, of course, by the anti-white tech titans. And perhaps this will set the table for the discussion of the rest of the show, these couple of pieces of news of information that are very important. You have thousands, many thousands of affidavits. So this is sworn under oath, punishable by law as perjury from individuals who are right, if you're inside of the anti-white narrative, right of the spectrum, who are normally most afraid of telling lies to law enforcement. Now, we're not talking about those at the very top of this ladder, but those at the bottom, regular conservative Americans. They are law abiding. They're not the kind of people who, like in Ferguson, you had quite a few people that came forward and they gave sworn testimony about what was happening with the anti-white, that he was threw his hands up in the air and he was begging, don't shoot. And he was shot down in cold blood. And then, of course, it was revealed. And many of these people admitted that had given the sworn testimony. Yes, that was a lie. And then nothing happened to them. On the other end of the spectrum, these people who pay their taxes, they don't give sworn testimony to law enforcement lightly. So you have many thousands of these affidavits. And in a place like Wisconsin alone, many hundreds and hundreds of pages of sworn affidavits where people are saying, I saw election irregularities, I saw them bring, I saw the law being broken, I saw ballots being brought in the back door, I saw many votes that were that only had Joe Biden as the only person voted for on the entire ballot. But on top of all of that, there is now this information that there are millions of ghost votes, meaning that the people don't exist, that there isn't a dead person to even point to, that there isn't somebody who's too young to point to. There isn't even a cat that could be put in the place or some family animal that could be put in the place of the ghost vote, just purely fictional votes. Millions of these are ostensibly going to be revealed. And the last thing I will share before passing it back and seeing if we have any questions is that we had this guy who came forward by way of Project Veritas from the post office. And by the way, we have more postal workers who have come forward and said that they were ordered to backdate so that these votes would be in on time, even though there shouldn't have been a moving of the date, because that's illegal. That's being something that's done by a court rather than the only way that it can legally be done, which is by the state legislature. So you had this particular individual that came forward over the Project Veritas interview. He was then the Postmaster General, actually then deceitfully told the United States. And now this is what's being shared by the regime's media to, of course, create a momentum in the population, a momentum that they hope their tactic here. And I wish we could have gotten into this with Jared if he had been here longer. The anti-whites who call themselves Democrats, their tactic is fait accompli. That what they want to do is they want to have so many millions and millions of people who are just creating this momentum that they say it's fait accompli. It doesn't matter what the law is. You just have to deal with it. Ergo, Joe Biden is president. The Postmaster General came forward and said, oh, well, this guy has recanted. He wasn't ordered to do anything like this. That's what's being reported. He never did that. He was then called in for an interview with the Postmaster General. During that interview, and thankfully for this, he wore a wire to record the information. And I'll have to pull up the exact verbiage because it's quoted what the Postmaster General in the United States actually said. He actually said to this guy in his office that it's good for him to be terrified about what will happen to him and his family, because it makes him think clearer, and therefore he will now remember that this was a memory that was born out of the stress of the moment, and it didn't actually take place. So fortunately, this is the sort of intimidation from the highest levels. So you have it from the people in the streets who are, and I just will also say, I've got to say this and pass it back, because everyone has to know this, and thankfully here we can say so, and you all should be saying it to your friends and family. Almost every single member of the elected representatives of federal level in the United States and state level who are participating, Republicans, are having their lives threatened. Anti-whites are showing up at their offices. They're leaving letters in their mailboxes at their houses. They're taking photographs of their children, where their children go to school, and then they're mailing them and dropping this sort of stuff off at their mailbox. They are doing everything they can to psychologically terrorize and physically terrorize the staffs and the Republican elected officials in the United States. And they've now moved on to not just them, but also the lawyers and their families who are prosecuting the cases for the Republican Party, and the judges and their families who will be reviewing these cases. So it's everything from individuals in political office all the way down to these street level dregs of society. Think about how you would feel if you walked out to your mailbox tomorrow morning and there was a letter that wasn't mailed to you, was left in your mailbox, no going through the postal service, no address. And inside the letter, inside the envelope was a letter saying, your children are going to die. Your wife is going to die. Here are the photographs of where they go to the gym, where they go to school. And here are some of the photographs where their heads have been cut out of the photo to show that they've been decapitated, to tell you, to threaten you that there are things worse than death in this world. And that's what we're going to do to your wives and to you. And if, especially if you're a female, in one of these roles, and to your children, we're going to abduct your children. That is what's happening in the United States of America right now. And none of the regime's media is reporting this. So you all are going to have to tell people if that reality is going to get out to the world. It is a coup d'etat from the top to the bottom, utilizing every tool at their within reach for the anti-whites. And that includes a postmaster general and others in positions of power, like Schumer going down saying, we're going to take Georgia and then we're going to remake the United States. They absolutely will, all the way down to these sorts of terroristic threats. Mark immediately, I can tell you this, when I said that this is happening to the people across the United States, he immediately thought of his lady and his little girl and thinking about these letters showing up with photographs of them going to get the groceries or whatever, saying, we know where they go. We know how to get at them. And this is what we're going to do to them if you don't back off and you allow us to have our way. This is what's happening in the United States right now. It is a coup d'etat. The election is absolutely not over in any sense. There are multiple paths for Donald Trump to win the election, and none of it is illegal. In fact, two of the paths to victory for Donald Trump are written in the Constitution. They are remedies in the Constitution that he can pursue. There is court case already at the Supreme Court that gives precedent for another one of the paths for Donald Trump to review all of these votes. And when there are recounts, it's not just a, let's take the overall number and let's just recount the totality of it. No, these ballots have to be examined. And when you have so many of these election irregularities coming to the fore right now, and every day there are not like a trickle more, there are many hundreds and thousands more. When you have that every single day, the election is in question. So do not allow yourself or anybody else in your circles of influence to conclude that this thing is a fait accompli, because that is exactly the psychological intent that the anti-whites want to inflict on you and your families. Stand firm in this. And you in the UK and everywhere else around the world, you have to stand with us, because they get Biden into office and we read the bills. They are going to declare all of you terrorists, and then they will be able to use the dark arts of the CIA on any of you at any time they want, certainly the people at the heads of white positive organizations around the world. So something to think about, and I'll pass it back to Mark.
Well, thank you. Very, very interesting there, the lengths they're going to, but I really do hope there is a way through this for Trump. I really echo what Jared said. We existed before Trump and will exist after him. At most, he was only going to be in power for 8 years. But I still want him to win. And I want him to win because they put those barricades on the buildings, not for Trump supporters if Biden won, but for Biden supporters if Trump won. And I want to see all of those leftists, all of those anarchists, all of those BLM supporters show their true colors. And I want them to go on that rampage, and I want the world to see what monsters these communists are. And I think that one of the greatest displays of that would have been if Trump had won. If Trump was declared the winner on election night, as he was in 2016, I think the level of madness on the streets would have been, well, it would have been something unbelievable. But we do have some more super chats. Ragnar, the guy who super chatted earlier, gave another $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, we need to make Mark and Laura uncancelable. So we can't be cancelled. Mark, what amount would make that happen for you? We as supporters need to put our money where our mouths are. Well, thank you so much for the kind words. I'm not somebody who... I'm not massively motivated by money. I obviously do need money to live. I do need to support my family. I do need to keep a roof over my head. And I am very, very grateful for every super chat, every bit of Bitcoin, every penny that people send me. I genuinely am, and I'm genuinely touched by people's generosity. I don't want to put a figure on things. I will say this, though. We do get great numbers viewing, and it's a shame that we're not in a situation where everyone can't give a small amount. I mean, if everyone watching these streams every week just gave 50 pence, which is virtually nothing, I would be so absolutely comfortable. I could dedicate every minute of my day to nationalism, and that would be fantastic. But that isn't how it is. And I am very, very grateful for every penny I get. And obviously, every time somebody does send a donation or a super chat, that generosity does go toward me working for this cause, producing shows like this, working on leaflets, working on multiple different fronts to help advance our cause. And, you know, I genuinely am thankful for that. I'm not somebody that wants to be like these other nationalist leaders, driving around in brand new cars, living in amazing million-pound mansions. That's not what I'm looking for. I only have two dreams in life. I only have two things that I want in life, and one of those is to ensure a future for our people. Laura knows what both of them are. Laura knows what both of them are. So if I'm ever taken care of, Laura can make sure that both of my dreams, both of my wishes in life are fulfilled. But I'm sure that we will definitely win a future for our children. We'll definitely keep fighting for this. But I'm not somebody who's massively motivated by money. But I am always touched and humbled by people's generosity. So thank you for asking. And obviously, if you do donate, if you do make a contribution, then, yeah, thank you so much, because it does help. Somebody in the chat says, Mark deserves a white BMW with a certain symbol on it. Well, that would certainly be interesting, going and doing the shopping with Sophia in the baby seat in a brand new white BMW with a giant one of them on the bonnet. Certainly getting noticed. Certainly getting noticed. Maybe also getting into some form of trouble, and maybe having to put Sophia on my shoulders and run from the mob. Who knows? But it would be entertaining. It would be entertaining. We have another super chat here from Phil Barker, and he says, great show. Thank you for all you do. He gave $3. Well, thank you very much for the super chat, and thank you for the comment. And Ragnar gave another $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, if we run candidates for local councils, what are the best targets? Well, I believe the best targets for standing for local council are former Labour heartlands, but in areas that voted Brexit. So you have places where people are sort of lower middle class, working class. And when I say working class, don't go to places where everybody's unemployed and everyone sits doing nothing all day. The BNP used to go and canvass those kind of areas. And we always found that our canvass returns from estates with very high unemployment were the highest canvass returns we ever got. Yet on election day, it was always very curious, because despite us getting massive canvass returns, sometimes 60% of people saying they'd vote for us in those areas, those people rarely voted. Now, in other areas where people were generally working sort of lower middle class, running their own businesses, white van men, electricians, plumbers, people like that, people who had a decent, stable income, when those people said they would vote for you, slightly less of them would say they would vote for you, but everyone who said they would vote for you would actually go to the polls. They would actually follow through. And I always put that down to the fact that they were highly motivated people. They were people who often run their own business. They were people who were up and about, you know, 6 a.m. every morning, usually family people, usually people who on their days off would spend their time not really sitting about, but actually out doing things. They would be out in their garden making it look beautiful. They'd be polishing their car. They'd be doing their own loft conversion. You know, when they weren't working, they were actually working. Their time off was spent working. And those people were the kind of people who were very, very reliable. And this actually came to light in a place in Bradford. There was a particular sink estate in Bradford called the Ravenscliff Estate. And it was known for having quite high unemployment, having a lot of problems, having a lot of troubles. And we were getting the most insanely high canvas returns we'd ever received there. Now, we didn't win that seat. Yet in a place called Morley in Leeds, which is a mixture of working class, and when I say working class, I mean people who actually work, and sort of lower middle class voters, places with new build estates, with families who just got on the housing ladder, those kind of people, that was a place where we thought the BNP would never be an acceptable party. And we won that seat. We actually won that seat because everyone who said they were going to vote for us actually did, because they were all, as I said, highly motivated people who were engaged in gainful activities at all times. So look at those kind of places. Look at places where people are working class, lower middle class. They've got a little bit of something. They work hard. They work hard in their spare time. It's an old labor area where people aren't as afraid to speak their mind, where people aren't so bothered about minding their P's and Q's, but they do have a bit of a stake in society. And if that area has already voted for Brexit, that's the kind of area where people are working class, old school labor. So, you know, they believe in community, they believe in, to a degree, socialism, but they're also patriots, they're also nationalists. They also have that pride in their country, that the people who put the football flags out when England play. They're the kind of people, those are the kind of areas that you do very, very well in. And if people say, oh, Mark, you know, you've got it wrong, I don't. I get it. I haven't got it wrong, because I've been there and I've done that, and I've knocked on doors in areas like that, and I've walked out of estates absolutely buzzing, saying we've got 60% in that area and we haven't won. Then I've walked out of estates going, oh, we've done all right. We've got about 30% said yes there, and we have won. Because, you know, when 30% of people say yes and they all make good on that yes, that's a lot better than 60% saying yes, but only 10% of those people making good on their votes. Very, very important. Always look at how motivated the people are that you're speaking to. Because if those people aren't motivated to do anything in their life, they won't be motivated to vote either. Think about that. Very important. I would say, in places like West Yorkshire, look at places like Wakefield and the surrounding towns. Those areas are all old Labour areas that overwhelmingly voted for Brexit. They're overwhelmingly white demographically still, and they are people that used to vote BNP in their droves, and they're all people that are hardworking, good people who have that little bit of stake in society. And we should be standing independents. Even if the Electoral Commission don't pass us, you know, I would like to see us at some point stand independents. Although with this COVID thing, I'm not sure how feasible that would be, because if we can't even hold electoral meetings and get people rallied together, What can we do? What can we do? Now, we have some unpaid. The White Butterfly has sent $5. Thank you very much, Jodie. And she said, thank you for being the catalyst that got me back to England, Mark. Sending so much love to you and Jason and to this ever-growing community. Our spirit is strong and we are all remembering that. Well, thank you very much, Jodie. Jodie was living abroad. She contacted me. She sent me numerous emails. We corresponded for quite some time. And it's fantastic. She's come back to England. She's come back to get involved in politics. She's come back to get involved in this fight for the future of our nation. So thank you so much, Jodie. And please make sure that you go and support her channel tonight, because she's streaming directly after this at 9 p.m. Jodie K, the White Butterfly, will be streaming live on YouTube. We've got another super chat here. Lee Peter gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, working class English built the Western world. Yes, they did. And very, very, very true. And as I said, look at places, look at old Labour places that voted against their MP. And you've got that tension, you see. And that was one of the reasons many of these Labour constituencies flipped and unfortunately ended up voting for Boris Johnson recently, because they were so disgusted that their MPs voted against them. You know, that's that unfortunately is, you know, they ran into the arms of Boris Johnson, and running into the arms of Boris Johnson is not good for them. Unfortunately, they didn't run into the arms of a genuine nationalist alternative. They went into the arms of a vile, vile globalist who is just as much a fan of the demographic shift as Labour ever were. In fact, more so, because he's doing more to flood the country than Labour did at the time. But yes, the working class Englishmen or working class Britons built this world. Yiz the eunuch, she got the top rated non-paid question, said, do you think going to the big march on Saturday in DC is a good place to go and hand out no white guilt flyers with white positive sites, or do you think it's too dangerous and we should avoid? I would like to go. Well, that's a question for you, Jason. Should we go to the big march on Saturday in DC to hand out your flyers?
Well, I would say, and that's a fantastic question. Thank you so much, Yiz, and thank you so much for all the work that you're doing in service to white well-being. Right now, I would say for those who are within driving distance, this is the Million MAGA March, and this Saturday, Washington, D.C., I would say for those who are within driving distance, if you are of the mind that you would like to participate in this, I guess maybe irrespective of whether or not the anti-whites, and I'm going to share a piece of information in a moment, whether or not they're going to be there in force or not, or trying to come out and vex people. Remember, there's going to be a great many people there, so you can do the tabulation yourself, but be prepared for just about anything. Be prepared to show up and leave. If this is your inclination, I would say absolutely come to the Million MAGA March and distribute literature, no white guilt literature. You can you can create your own little leaflet, nowhiteguilt.org, theafterparty.tv, or whatever you want to add to this. Specifically, we would like to get Crucible in front of as many MAGA people. That's what we've been doing, because that is the story that will definitely touch them. And they will have experienced the totality of what takes place in that story. And they'll begin using then the key pieces of the lexicon and the dialectic that will empower them, that will take them out of the anti-white narrative, make a big difference in their lives. Now, having said that, I will almost assuredly go for some measure of time. I will almost assuredly be in DC for some measure of time. I am going to share, as we get closer to Saturday, the information that I will be able to glean from sources about the plans of the radical anti-whites and that fly under the different names of their taking, and whether or not they're actually going to be implementing some sort of big strategy in Washington, D.C., or they're going to try to appear there in force. And so then based on that information, you know, you might decide, well, I'm going to go anyway, and maybe just for a bit. Certainly earlier is going to be better, because these people are rarely awake in the earlier part of the day. So earlier would be better, safer. But I will share the information that I'm able to glean from sources about whether or not the anti-whites will be planning some sort of big action. And this is not like information like I'm going to ask a few people who might know a few anti-white people, or no, this is much more legitimate information that I'll be able to share. But as I said, I mean, there are plenty of people who are robust, brave guys and gals out there. This is a great opportunity, and I will probably bring one of the crucible signs to sacrifice there to post somewhere where people will be walking, and just let whatever will happen to it will happen. But it's going to be an amazing, potentially, event. And who knows how many people will end up showing. I haven't seen the estimates yet, but it's being publicized widely. And you have a great many millions of conservatives, nationalists, MAGA types, Tea Party types that are furious, that are absolutely furious in a way that they have not been furious before. You've seen probably, and it's difficult though, some of the footage of them showing up at different places, courthouses, government buildings, state governments and the like in their cities. You've seen a little bit of it. If the regime's media had been reporting this, you would see it far more widespread than all of the destruction that the anti-whites were paying people, many of them, to get into the streets and do this sort of thing. So conservative Americans, nationalists, MAGA Americans are furious. I hope that Saturday is a great success, and I look forward to potentially seeing some of you there in the nation's capital, Mordor on the Potomac.
Thank you. We've had another paid super chat, two in fact, for camaraderie, gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, hello, Mark and Jason. I hear the balloons have moved to Jason's bedroom. Hope he has a gas later. That's it. No more balloon jokes, I promise. Always good to tune into PWR every week. Sending positivity. Bless you, brothers. Well, thank you very much for the super chat. And also, just to remind, Jason is a complete and utter turncoat for not eating the balloon when he was ordered to. I could have had another super chat if he'd eaten the balloon. I'd have eaten a balloon for you, Jason. You know, we're meant to be willing to take bullets for each other, not, you know, and you wouldn't even eat a balloon for me. What kind of backstabbing is that? It's ridiculous. Also, somebody has mocked Jason. They've said that Jason isn't fit to step in David Duke's, isn't fit to walk in David Duke's shoes. So Jason manages 10 hours. David Duke could speak for 12 hours without having to draw breath. So somebody has thrown down the gauntlet to you and said that David would easily do a further 2 hours than you could ever stream, and he would barely draw breath. What do you think, Jason? Are you up for the 12-hour challenge?
Well, we could definitely, I think that's probably true. I think David could speak on one breath of air for 12 hours and passionately the entire time. But well, heck of a set of lungs on that guy. But I think we will do, I'm sure, a 24-hour stream at some point. And YouTube, I understand, you have to now, it'll stream constantly on YouTube, but you won't get a replay beyond 12 hours. So I'd have to cut it at 12 hours and then start it again to do a 24-hour stream. But maybe that's a possibility in the future.
Well, there are those music channels, aren't they, that like play sort of relaxing music and stuff like that, and they constantly stream. And the same with some of these other channels that replay nursery rhymes for kids. I remember when I used to try and get Sophia to sort of sleep, and I'm not particularly good at singing, and often I'd put nursery rhymes on, and I would use YouTube to select a nursery rhyme. And I'd notice that some of these channels would just stream nursery rhymes 24/7, just constantly live streaming them. So I'm not sure how they do that, but I'm sure if they can, we can. But we have another couple of super chats. David Peterson gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, how can we stop our own police force from harassing us because we advocate for the interests of our own people against people who hate us? Well, thank you, David. That's a very, very important question. And in fact, it's so important, and you're going to get so much value for your £5 that myself and Laura are going to do an emergency stream about this on Friday. We have been harassed, or a number of our leafletters have been harassed by the police. And myself and Laura will be doing a special stream about this on Friday night at 7 p.m. on this channel. So please do look forward to that. Stanley Sloggett gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, Mark, Jason, fantastic stream tonight. Jared was superb. Thanks for your efforts in supporting White Wellbeing. Well, thank you very much, Stanley. That's very, very kind of you. And I very much appreciate the super chat. It was a great stream tonight. And Hooch gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. That's very kind of you. And he says, here you go, Mark. Well, thank you very much. That is very generous of you. We have some other unpaid questions. Rory Herbert said, my father brought a Rolls Royce with the number plate SS50. He later changed it to HH10. Mark, if you were to have a personalized number plate, what would it be? These are the sort of questions that people ask me because they know that I'm going to say something ridiculous that's going to be clipped out and used against me forever. So I'm just going to say something very simple. It would have to just be MAC1 because that's my initials and there's only one of me. No offences can be caused by that. This isn't going to be Bookgate 2.0. Trust me, we're not doing that tonight. The chat, you see, there's always people in the chat who want it as well, yeah. Isn't there? There's always somebody in the chat that is literally waiting for me to say that one say that one thing, yeah, that they're going to find hilarious. Is going to be that is going to be clipped out. But tonight, there is going to be no joy on that one. Real Mermaid is typing, said, have either of you ever done a show with Nick Fuentes? I don't think I have. I would always be welcome, open to do one. I think a lot of the work he does is very good. He gets fantastic numbers. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where he goes with things if Trump is defeated, because at one point he seemed quite critical of Trump. Now he seems very on board with Trump. He seems very trust the plan. But if the plan doesn't go the way we think it's, well, way hope it goes, we'll have to see what happens. Bryneth Malden gave £20. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, those who don't believe the propaganda experienced the terror. Indeed, my friend, very, very wise words there. Very, very wise words there. And those who don't believe our warnings, it's almost, somebody once said to me, well, not once, a little while back, said to me that we're very much like modern day Cassandras. And those who don't know who Cassandra is, she is a figure from Greek mythology. And she went to, I believe it was Zeus, and she was an extremely beautiful woman. And she said, I want the gift of prophecy. And Zeus offered her the gift of prophecy on the promise that she would then go to bed with him. He granted her the gift of prophecy, and then she refused to sleep with him, thinking that she had got one up on the god. And he said, I am not going to take away what I promised you, but I am going to curse you. And his curse was that although she had the gift of prophecy, nobody would believe the things she prophesied. So she spent her whole life telling people the truth about what would happen to them, only for them to laugh it off and ignore her. And this basically drove her to madness. And it was her punishment for not making good on her side of the bargain. And I kind of feel as if nationalists are the modern day Cassandras. Because ultimately, we are out there constantly warning people about the inevitability of what is coming due to the demographic shift, due to mass immigration, due to multiculturalism. And ultimately, many of the people who listen to our words, many of the people who see us protesting about this demographic change, walk away shaking their heads and smiling as if we're insane. So yeah, those who don't heed our words are probably in for trouble down the line. VM asked a question. This was for Jared Taylor, so he's not here to answer that now. Sorry, we had limited time with him. Celtic Crusader said, the great Tom Metzger died last week. And did Jared Taylor know him well? Now, I found out about this today. Now, I didn't know Tom Metzger. I never worked with him. I know he was part of an several organizations in the States. The only exposure I really had to Tom Metzger was a very sort of ill thought out documentary that he did with Louis Theroux. And that wasn't particularly wonderful, but I believe he was a sincere guy. I believe he genuinely, you know, believed in this cause and fought for it. And I obviously my condolences go out to his family, to his friends, to his loved ones in these dark times. You know, whether people agree with the way he approached this cause, he did dedicate his life to fighting for it. And if for nothing else, we should at least remember him for that and for his contribution. Did you ever meet him or have anything to do with him, Jason?
I didn't, but I knew quite a little bit about him, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned about whatever he did right. He did a number of things that ended up being quite self-destructive, but he was dedicated. We condole, definitely condole with his family for his passing. And certainly his son, I think he at least had one son that was close with him in the work that he did. I think he was a TV repairman, if I'm recalling that correctly. And he got, you have skill set match when you have immigration to a country. And in the United States, the skill set match for a great many decades was for people who worked with their hands. So people like TV repairmen and people who hang drywall and put shingles on roofs. And so you had a lot of these astronauts coming across the border, and you had a huge swath of the United States that were, you know, worked more with just their mind rather than with their hands. And since their jobs weren't challenged, there was no skill set match there, they and their families sneered in a typical anti-white way at the working class, people like, you know, my father, my family, and Tom Metzger and his family. And they ended up, all of us, having to struggle first. And now, of course, we see skill set match going up the ladder, and has now for a couple decades. And now these people are wringing their hands about, it's a great lesson there for our people about having to stick together, irrespective of nationality, irrespective of language, irrespective of your economic class or status. And as a consequence, he decided to get out into the public and tell the world about what was going on. And incidentally, I mean, talking about the story of Cassandra, he suffered tremendously from that curse, going to the world saying, this is exactly what's happening in the blue-collar communities. And it's coming for the totality. If it's not your blue-collar community yet, it will be, and eventually to all white-collar communities as well. And he was laughed off by a great many. And Mark is right. He took some paths in order to share or spread that information that are certainly open to criticism, but nonetheless, where he served white well-being in a way that conforms with my morality, I laud him and I condole with his family.
Thank you. Rundus242 said, may I record some bits of the stream and share them? You certainly can. People are welcome to clip bits of my streams out. In fact, there is now on YouTube a channel, Mark Collett Clips. Please go to that. Please share them. Great channel. You know, fantastic. If people want to clip things out and send them viral, please do so. A very uncreative name said, what is PA's stance on the crooked banking system and the wood? And would the banksters face criminal charges for what they have done? We are obviously against a usury and debt-based financial system. And yes, people involved in usury, banking, and essentially placing financial chains around our people would face criminal charges. And what's more, and this is just a personal rant, I believe that failure and success should both be rewarded. I believe that if you do something and it goes very well, if you do something and it is an unmitigated success, for example, if you are working for a big corporation and you come up with a wonderful new marketing scheme, or if you do something that causes profits to go sky high because you came up with a great idea, I have no problem with those people reaping the rewards from their hard work. If somebody comes up with a great idea tomorrow for a company like, I don't know, let's just say Next, a clothing retailer in the UK. Somebody comes up with a wonderful marketing campaign and it gets people queuing through shopping centres to get into Next and buy Next clothes. Then, yeah, the person who came up with that idea, the person who came up with this wonderful new marketing campaign should be remunerated for their hard work. And why not? That's fair. But equally, if people are helming these big companies that employ thousands and thousands of people, and they drive that company onto the rocks, they destroy it, they cause the company to hemorrhage money, and they cause thousands of jobs to be shed, then those people should pay the price. They shouldn't then leave with a golden handshake of $500,000 and go and assume a similar role for another large company and continue to be rewarded, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds a year. Failure, the problem with these big corporations is that success is rewarded, but failure is rewarded not with a punishment, not with demotion, not with being sacked, but it's rewarded with a golden handshake and an equally well-paid job in another firm. Failure needs to be punished and success needs to be rewarded. And unfortunately, we have built a financial system in Britain today where there is a small elite who are in great positions of power in banking, in finance, in big business, in tech companies. And it doesn't matter how hard they fail. They never suffer for that failure. In fact, the only people that suffer for their failure are those employed by them and the taxpayer who ends up bailing them out. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, if you stand to make hundreds and hundreds of thousands in bonuses for success and you fail absolutely, totally and cost people their jobs, you then should stand to lose a huge sum of money. Or social standing, or be barred from holding those high positions in industries again because of your failure. Because if you are costing normal people their income and their jobs, you should never be placed in a position again where you can put people's jobs at risk. If you have a pet cat and you don't feed it and you leave it locked in the bathroom for 2 weeks and it starves to death in a horrible way, you are barred from owning cats again. It's as simple as that. Well, if you are in business and you put thousands of people's jobs at risk due to your terrible business practices, you should never be in a position again where people rely on you to put food on the table for their family. It's as simple as that. And when it comes to these bankers, these people have repeatedly failed and they have been paid huge bonuses for failing. This whole rotten system needs to be burnt to the ground and rebuilt again in a much fairer, better and more transparent way where success is rewarded, failure is punished, and never again are our people and our people's well-beings placed in the hands of crooks, incompetents, criminals, and shysters. I think basically that more or less sums it up. And we are finally rumbling towards the end of this epic and very, very white pilling show. And I think I really thank everyone who has stuck around tonight. At peak on DLive, we had about 1,700. We've still got just under 2,000 watching now. We've had 800 watching on Radio Albion. So overall figures, nearly 3,500 watching at peak. Absolutely incredible numbers for this show, especially after being deplatformed. And Jason said something about the deplatforming I just want to touch upon. The work that goes into building a Twitter account with 60,000 followers cannot be sniffed at. It took a lot of time, and it is a blow, and it does feel like a bit of a punch in the gut at times. But the positivity that I've been shown from the community over the last couple of days and the huge white pill that this show has been just goes to show that we can keep on doing shows like this, that we can keep on promoting these shows, that we can keep on bringing in fantastic audiences. Because One thing that I've learned in building this community is just how important community is. And to know that all you wonderful people have got my back, that you've stuck around for this show, that you've shared the show, that you've put the word out, honestly, it's really, really touching. Thank you to everyone who did that tonight. But we are just about to wrap up. Jason, my friend, where can we find you? How can we support your work? And when is your next show?
NoWhyGuilt.org, theafterparty.tv. And I think I might stream very briefly just to touch upon, right after we finish here, just to touch upon some of those facts, some of that information that's coming out about the ghost ballots and things of this nature, and maybe some more about why, for example, did Donald Trump stop following AIPAC and Netanyahu, and what actually happened there? There are a lot of folks that who haven't quite seen as deeply into what took place there as took place. So we'll talk about that, and I'll give an analogy that everyone will understand. I'll just give a hint there. Treason, infidelity to friendship is what took place. So we'll be talking about that. We have TAP probably on Saturday, but maybe before then. Just keep an eye out for the tweets and the gabs and the like that Mr. George and I will be sharing. And a big thank you to all of you for being with us today. Fantastic numbers, as Mark said. And a big thank you to the one and only Mark Collett, who has dedicated so much of his life to our well-being, to the well-being of our people globally, and is under fire continually by the anti-whites for daring to care for our most vulnerable members, for daring to care about our people and history. So a big debt of gratitude to you, dear brother. Thank you. Thank you for building up that mighty audience on Twitter that they have thieved from you because of your success. And I have high hopes for you to achieve even higher numbers on some of these other platforms, brother. And I pass it back.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words. Now, look, we've still got over 1,800 people watching. Any 1,000? Oh, it's just dropped down. Only 1,700 now, and only 1,800 people watching still. Please, all of those people, Go over to Jodie Kay's channel now. I'll be back here on Friday with Laura Towler, but go over to Jodie Kay's channel now, The White Butterfly, over on YouTube. I am going to shoot out the link to her channel now. But if some people can put it in the chat, that would be absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure whether she's going to be on YouTube or be live tonight. But please go over and support her now, just as she's getting started. It's very important that we support smaller content creators. It's very important we support the rest of the community. I'm sure it's going to be a great show. Please jump over and support Jodie Kay now. I'll be sharing the link on Telegram in a couple of seconds. Thank you for being here. It's been an incredible show. Thank you so much to Jared. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to all the people who donated so very generously. Thank you to this amazing community. I love you all. It has been immense, the amount of goodwill and kind words that I've received over the last couple of days. I will be back on Friday. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. I love you all. Please go and watch Jodie Kay. She's an amazing woman. There'll be some amazing content produced tonight. Go and show your support. Thank you so much, guys, and I'll see you all again on Friday. And, of course, back here on Wednesday next week for Morgoth. See you then, guys. Thank you so much. Have a great day.